played in here for Jaden Shaw on the edge of the box. Jaden Shaw has the goal. A long distance strike. And Jaden Shaw's incredible start on the international scene continues.
Good. Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle, and I'm here with my co-host, Courtney Stiff. Courtney, how are you?
My perpetual feeling of tired. Just like a different level of tired. Before I started recording, I did not take my magnesium vitamin, which is good because otherwise I would literally fall asleep in the middle of this. Because my magnesium glycinate kicks, like, makes me fall asleep in a grand total of 45 minutes. So wow, I'm happy I did not do that before this.
I am too, because that would have been really unfortunate, or although I might have just been rambling myself, because we got fun stuff to talk about. And basically, if you just tuning in, we know we usually do a review up top, and I do want to do a review because y'all were really, really dope when we asked you to review to counter the nonsense. I've seen a lot of reviews pour in and really can't thank y'all enough. But really, in this episode, we're going to talk about the U.S. Women's National Team performance versus Japan. That's going to be the majority of the episode. We are going to hit on some stuff from Brazil, Canada, but just to let y'all know, that's what we're going to focus on. It might be a shorter episode, but every time we say that.
We like record for literally 2.5 hours.
Every so we're going to see what happens. but again, to the review, again, thank y'all so much. We got caught up in the nonsense, and we started getting some one-star reviews from the crazy people, from the bigots, and asked y'all to step up, and y'all did. So really appreciate that. And some of them were really dope, like this one from Rough and Gully. Honestly, love that name. Love it.
Great name.
This one is called Always On Point. Andre and Courtney provide expert analysis of the women's soccer landscape and are not afraid to discuss and name the problems, in parentheses, racism, transphobia, homophobia, abuse, etc., plaguing the sport. Thank you for always standing up and speaking out, and appreciate that. I know it's important to me that we do that with this platform. I know it's important to Courtney as well, and we'll probably have more to say on that later on. But not that we need the thanks. It ain't about us, but still appreciate the recognition and love that y'all are vibing with it, and especially those of you who feel targeted by the nonsense. We got your backs.
Yeah, thank you, Rough and Gully. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rough and Gully.
I know that's like your name, but it feels like it's like a pair. It's like there's Rough and Gully.
It's amazing. All right. Courtney, I ain't got nothing else to say. Should we just get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. You know what? I said it. I've been waiting for it, and honestly, I'm just gonna say we've vroomed, right? Like, this was the exciting thing about the U.S. Women's National Team performance to me. If not, I'm just gonna hit you with the top line stats. Courtney can hit you with the lineup, but I'm just gonna say it was a 2-1 win. Japan scored 30 seconds into the game, which we will definitely talk about.
Absolutely wild.
Because that was
absolutely
hilarious.
Absolutely wild.
Being in the stadium was very funny, and I'll talk about that later. But then the U.S. Got a goal back from Jaden Shaw, who was at the 10 this time. And that was just got a lot more to say about that as well.
Who would have known?
Who would have known? She scored that goal in the 21st minute. And then Sophia Smith won a penalty. And Lindsay Horan dispatched that in the 77th minute. 2-1, the U.S. came back from going down 30 seconds through the game to win against a very good, very talented, very organized, very fun Japan team that wasn't really able to be their fun selves for some interesting reasons. Courtney, do you want to do lineups or do you want to just get into it?
Yeah, I'll take everyone through the lineup. So the U.S. played in a 4-3-3 with Alyssa Nair in goal, Jenna Neiswanger at left back, Tierna Davidson as left center back, Naomi Grimm as right center back, and Emily Fox as right back. Your midfield trio was Lindsay Horan, Sam Coffey, and Jaden Shaw at the 10. And then the front three was Mallory Swanson, her first start in 364 days. 364, literally one day short of being a year.
That's amazing.
which is absolutely amazing, with Trinity Rodman and Alex Morgan leading the line. We'll say Alex Morgan is back at number 13. I think she should permanently switch to Alex Morgan 7 when she plays for the U.S. Women's National Team, but we will get into that later. And then for Japan, Andre, I believe they played, did they have 4-4-2? How would you describe their lineup? And what, like?
Yeah, Japan are in. I mean, so Google has it as a 4-2-3-1, and I don't necessarily think that's what it was the majority of the time. But Japan is one of those teams that's just extremely fluid. So I would probably call it, I think you might be right with a 4-4-2. But they were all, not to get into the analysis and all that stuff yet, but they were really pressed out of what they probably wanted to do. So it's probably even harder to tell what their formation was going to be in the first place. But so I'm going to go with Shore 4-4-2.
Okay, and they had Ayaka Yamashita in goal. I'm just going to read actually in the lineup in which they did it, which was by numerical order. Riza Shimizu, Moeka Minamini, Saki Kumagai, who folks should know from Roma, Miyabi Moraya, Riko Ueki, who I believe plays for West Ham. Yeah, I was like, there's no brain. Fuka Nagano, Yui Hasegawa, Aboa Fujino, Kiko Seike, and Momoko Tanikawa. And that was the Japan starting 11. With, if folks follow the WSL, they also should recognize Yui Hasegawa, who has been absolutely killing it for Manchester City this season.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was really excited to watch Hasegawa in person because she is so good. And she had moments, obviously. Like, she still had a pretty good game. But okay, so let's just... I don't know if I should just like start with like the first observations game wide that I kind of had.
Tell us about the atmosphere.
Okay, I was there. It was dope. It was extremely dope. It was very loud. The reported attendance was 50,644, which was the highest on domestic soil outside of the 1999. I'm sorry, World Cup final.
Yeah, and the largest home-friendly attendance ever.
Yeah, that was absolutely wild, and it was really dope to see. And Atlanta came out. Like, there were a ton of people. I walked and saw that fan event outside as well that they put on the Olympic Park. That was cool. There was a ridiculously long-ass line to take a photo and meet Ali Krieger. I was, like, walking, and I was like, yo, what is this like? Because I was looking for food. And I was like, damn, this line for food, this is going to be annoying. And then I looked up and I just saw one person like in this little square like pit and like put an arm around somebody and take pose for a photo. And I was like, oh, that's Krieger.
That is so funny.
So, yeah, that was extremely dope. And I mean, the people came out, but they were rowdy. They were loud before the game. But when Japan scored, yo. I could have talked to somebody on the other end of the stadium, like, just with my normal voice, because it was so quiet.
I was like, I bet you could hear a pin drop when that goal went in.
Yo, pin drop, mouse sneeze, like whatever you want to say, like you could hear everything in that stadium because nobody was making any lick noise. Because everybody was like, no, wait, redo. Like, that does not happen after all this buildup. You don't concede a goal in 30 seconds, but then they ramped up, you know, especially because the U.S. was pressing high, creating a lot of opportunities, and then it got really loud. But yeah, that initial goal was just so funny because everyone was like, yeah, oh.
Yeah, and that, I mean, scoring a goal that early is always absolutely wild. And then also it was like the way in which it happened, which was just like two passes.
Yeah.
Slicing through the way we've actually seen teams punish the U.S. several times before, which is isolating basically the space between the center back and either outside back, even though I feel like recently it's been the left back and the left center back. And we did see, I can't lie, I saw that goal go in and I was like, and then Japan was still going forward, I would say, for the first 10 or 15 minutes before the U.S., I think, kind of really started to turn on the gas, and I was like, I'm getting shades of Sweden at the 2020 Olympics. We all woke up early in the morning to see the U.S. get mollywopped.
And so that's the thing about Japan that, and I'll be honest with y'all, right? Like, I watched this Japan team at the World Cup, and they're my favorite team to watch at the World Cup. They've been one of my favorite national teams to watch probably since the last She Believes Cup when they played here as well. So, like, I was really excited to see them play in person again. So, like, in terms of what I was excited about, yeah, I was excited about the game, but I was like, all right, what are we going to have with the lineup? Like, for the U.S., it was more like a checklist. Like, what are we going to have for the lineup? Who's going to play where? What are the relationships going to look like? Who's going to be the forward line? Like, all of these things that I wanted to see and kind of analyze. For Japan, I was just like, yo, I'm just excited to watch this team play. But, and so, like, right, that first goal was exactly that. I think they really looked at targeting Jenna Neiswanger because she's super attacking. Obviously, she's not a natural left back. But she's back there. She has obviously had a lot of experience with the role with Gotham and now with the U.S. Women's National Team. Well, I say a lot at the national team. It hasn't really been a lot, but it's been enough. But she's still a natural, like, central attacking midfielder. That's why she gets into those spaces and why she's so good and why they really want her out there on the pitch. She drifts inside or she stays wide. She causes a lot of problems with her delivery and her ability to move around in space. But there were a lot of times, even after the goal, where Japan really seemed to, like, spray that ball really wide. And they always had somebody super wide on her side. And she was always tucked in narrow. And I was just kind of like, you're scaring me. Because, like, they could do this again if they happen to just, like, if we don't press. Because that was the problem with the first goal. You know, Mallory Swanson took a hard, heavy touch, which you can forgive because it was her first game back in almost a year.
It was also like the first touch of the game. Like, it wasn't like a it wasn't like a continuation of, like, the U.S. being sloppy and then, like, Japan pounces on it. Like, it's literally like two passes off kickoff, and they're like goals in the back of the net, and it's like, huh?
Right. So they ended up crowding Swanson and getting the ball from her when she took that heavy touch. And they passed the ball, like, once kind of laterally to keep it safe. And then they passed it back. And that pass back triggered a run, like, right by, right in that gap between Neiswanger and Davidson. And as soon as the ball got to the foot, I think it was Tanakawa, she just popped it over the top of the defense. And then it was 1v1 versus Nair. And they tried that a couple times. And Neiswanger stayed for it. But I'm sorry, I wanted to go back to my point. The reason why that worked is because the counter press for the U.S. was also not awake yet. Like, they weren't ready yet. The reason why it didn't work the rest of the times during the games is because when they had those players wide and they had that gap, either really out wide or when they were able to draw Neiswanger out there and create that gap, they still weren't able to exploit it because the U.S. was pressing so aggressively that they didn't have time to pick that pass out. And that's what was missing in the first 30 seconds that allowed that whole thing to go down.
Yeah, and I think that press, I know you tweeted about this, Sills tweeted about it, like, the U.S., I tweeted about outside back, and this, to be fair, was not about Jenna Neiswanger. Like, I think the way she's grown over the last year at an outside back, like, it's been absolutely tremendous. It's what won her the Rookie of the Year, her rookie season in the NWSL. But technically, they were also doing similar things to Emily Fox as well. Like, there were several times where I saw Trinity Rodman tracking back, especially in that first, like, 20, really, because what the U.S. scored in the, Jane Shaw scored in the 21st minute. So really from minutes zero to, I want to say, 16, there were a bunch of moments where a player like Trinity Rodman was going tracking back. And I think if the U.S. wants to play in that style where you get your wing, I almost said your wing backs, your outside backs high and wide, and you're only going to play 1-6, you have to press. Otherwise, teams can so quickly and easily carve you open. And to me, this game really proved, and while I didn't think it was, like, perfect, like, there were definitely things I probably would have changed a bit, like, it really did prove that the U.S., if they want to play in that way, you have to be a high-pressing team.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And, like, you could, like, if you watch the goal, you can just see how high the back line is. Like, they basically, they are on the halfway line. Everybody's boots are close to the halfway line. So it also gave so much space to play the pass. They didn't really have to be super precise, but it was a great pass either anyway. I think, like you said, Courtney, like, you have to press and counter press so that when you lose the ball, you don't give players time to pick a pass like that out or to get on the same page, because it's like as soon as that back pass went and there was no pressure, they took off. Like Japan was in sync. It was done. Like that's the goal is created already. Mm-hmm. But I also say there's another way you can prevent these things from happening. And that's by getting Sarah Gordon in the camp. And so like she erases things. If you're going to play a high line and every now and then somebody's going to get behind you, her superpower is eliminating those mistakes. They don't really punish you because she gets in the way. She's good at 1v1 defending and we know she's fast as hell. Now, I said that at the time, but I'm also even doubly saying that because one of the worst things happened, which we haven't had an update on her fitness yet, but Naomi Girma left this game with a thigh injury. I'm trying to figure out when was the actual time when she was replaced. 18 minutes.
It was before the equalizer.
And they had to bring in Abby Dahlkemper. And Dahlkemper and Davison played well together, so no shade to them. But I still think you're super reliant on Naomi Girma and her ability to cover space. And if you don't have her, you need somebody else who can do something similar. And to me, that's Sarah Gordon, who's even, I mean, just, she's just, we've talked about it before, right?
Yeah.
She frustrated Oshawala. You don't really get much faster than that, right? Maybe Tim Wachowinga might have something to say about that.
that is very true, but she's frustrated, but even at that same time, she's still frustrating even when it was a rare occurrence where she got beat. I will say, though, seeing Abby Dahlkemper back in, and I think I might have mentioned this, of it's kind of crazy seeing players play through pain for such a long time, and then when they're actually back 100% healthy. Yeah. Because I saw her recovery speed and I was like, did Abby Dahlkemper get faster? Did she get quicker? Yeah. And it was like, oh, she's probably not. And also, to be fair, her injury was like a back injury, which just controls virtually the entire way you move. I mean, any injury will do that. But specifically, like how serious of a back injury she had, where she had two back surgeries and got screws in her back. Like, it was a very serious injury. So even seeing her back, I was like, you know, obviously I was like, it's not great to have Naomi Girma, but having a player like Abby Dahlkemper who can slot in if you need her to, looking a bit faster, I was like, oh, this, I was like, this is good. And I was like, I'm happy that she's back. But I was also like, wow, I used to think she was like slow. And I was like, nope, she probably just couldn't move well because she had a really bad back injury.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's an excellent point. Because there are a lot of times when we're just kind of like, yo, this player, like they fell off. What happened to him? And it's like, well, what happened to him might have been just chronic injury. Either they have a serious injury or something like a back injury that, like you said, affects everything. So I think that is like a good thing to highlight because they look good. And dealing with like watching Japan in person, and I know like looking at the stats, 47% possession. They still have 452 passes, and the U.S. only had about 53 more passes than that, but their passing accuracy was way low. Japan was at 79%. They usually are not that low. Mm-hmm. And the thing with Japan that makes them so dangerous, and we saw at the World Cup, they can play with or without the ball. Yeah. Their performance against Spain was completely without the ball. They just said, we're going to control you. When we get the ball, we're going to hit you. But Spain didn't have that aggressive counter press the way the U.S. did. And the aggressive high press the way the U.S. did. And that, I think, is what made the difference and what made it frustrating for them. So from a Japan perspective, I was listening to the post game with Ikeda, their coach, and he was saying that the high press was something that they didn't necessarily expect from the U.S., which, again, why not? You know, not for him.
Because they're used to lock whatever.
Exactly. But like, why? It's terrible for me to think that like another national team coach can come in and be like, yeah, we didn't really expect in the press because the U.S. hasn't been pressing. And that's one of the things we're best at. And so it just kind of confirmed it that that's not what the U.S. has been doing at all. And then he was saying that it was so effective that it threw them off their plan A and B. Like they were really struggling.
Yeah, I was trying to find, I'm happy you said this because I thought I made it up at one point because I was like, I swore I saw a tweet that said the Japan coach had said that the U.S.'s press had thrown them off their plan A. But then I like looked for it and couldn't find it anywhere. And I was like, maybe I just dreamed this when I was reading the tweets. I'm very happy that you said that because it was very noticeable also with the U.S. press. And I also think the centerpiece of that press is a player like Sam Coffey.
Yes.
I created a tactical pack on Sam Coffey that ran an attacking third, which I was very proud of myself of. And what was a tactical pack? It was her pressing and winning the ball back high and immediately passing forward, and how it led to scoring opportunities for the U.S. And so, of course, when she gets a ball, feeds it to Jaden Shaw, I was like, wow, look at me and my crystal ball. I feel so good about what I just highlighted from this one player. No, but I think, yeah, having a player like Sam Coffey and the way that she's grown into this role for the U.S. Women's National Team, and I don't want to compare her to Julie Ertz, because I don't think any player fundamentally will be Julie Ertz. Like, it's just impossible. And I was actually quite surprised, because when we had seen just Sam Coffey and, like, Lindsey Horan as an eight previously for the U.S., it really just did not work. Mostly because Lindsey likes to float and get in pockets of space, which going forward can be great, but if you're not really diligent about getting back, that means you have one player trying to cover every blade of grass. And when you have, like, I think about, like, the Mexico match, like, if you're getting pulled out of position and things like that, it's just fundamentally not going to work. And to be fair with that, Mexico was also pressing. But I think the two of them, for the most part, like, I didn't see any huge glaring things where I was like, I don't know about this. And to be fair, I think having the U.S. have a press, like a high press and a counter press off that, also really kind of helped shore up a bit of those issues. Is it perfect? No. But is it also, like, a better step in the right direction? 100%.
Yeah, it's honestly, with the talent that we have and the ability to put it on the pitch, especially given what they're comfortable with, like, I understand that, like, you know, Horan hasn't played in the NWSL in a while, but the majority of those players have. They are comfortable in running and being very aggressive in possession and out of possession. And you want to harness that. You want to let them do that. Like, I understand you may want to find different ways to control games. You want maybe want a more intricate passing game if you happen to come up against a low block. You're not really going to press a low block because they don't want the ball anyway. So they're in a low block. And so, like, you are going to have to find different ways, but when you play teams, you like Canada, like Japan, like Sweden, you know, the Netherlands, Portugal, like whoever you end up playing, you can do this. Like, you can actually go out there and press and make things happen. And so I was really excited to see it. And I love Sam Coffey. As soon as I saw the ball kind of, like, her awareness, she's gotten so good at finding these moments where she can win and win the ball cleanly. And you can just see her. If you watch that entire phase of play, you can just see her. As soon as, I think, Horan kind of gets in the way of one pass, and then the ball's just kind of loose, and the player is trying to get, Japan player is trying to corral the ball, and she had no chance. Just no chance, because Coffey is on her in an instant. And low key, here's another thing. Sam Coffey is strong as hell.
Like, she is
very sturdy.
She is very sturdy. I feel like she maybe used to not be that sturdy, and then a season or two in the NWSL made her much more sturdy. Yeah, I think honing in on when she decides to go and pick a player's pocket is, like, it's almost like a perfect way to describe how she is as a player, because it's just that it is a 100% that awareness of, like, I should go and step in right now because I think I'm going to win the ball. And the amount of also, like, players' pockets I've just, like, seen her pick in, like, almost like a graceful way. Like, sometimes it's like I'm going to truck you type tackle. And then other times it's just
give
like,
me a lunch money.
Yeah. And then other times it is like a bit more graceful. It's like, oh, that player just, like, 100% did not, like, it's kind of bad where it's like, none of your teammates told you, like, man on, like, there's a player coming behind you. Sam Coffey's like, right. Hello, I'm picking your pocket. I'm going to play the ball forward. Also want to give a shout to Mal Swanson. I feel like since she has come back from that injury, she's just, like, playing with so much joy. Like, you can just tell she's just, like, enjoying the game. There were a few times, I can't lie, where I wish that players 100% did not pass to her because they could have, like, passed the ball in the net. Like, that's my one criticism of the U.S. Or my one main criticism is they should have scored many more goals. Like, obviously we know that Swanson, to be fair, did get a ball cleared, like literally cleared right off the line. But there were a few other moments where it was like, maybe the decision making, it very much seemed like a, especially once the U.S. got 2-1 up, it was like, give the ball to Mal so Mal can score, which is like a lovely thing to do. But also there are times where I was like, just shoot the ball yourself, like just play it, like pass it into the net. Like you're in a perfect, obviously scoring goal is not that simple, but like there were times where I was like, you're in a much better position to try to like test the goalkeeper, trouble the back line, etc. And then they were like, give the ball to Mal, and then Mal's either shot went wide or got saved or something, and I was like, oh. But yeah, Andre, I'm curious, how did you think, like, when the front three was Swanson, Rodman, and Morgan, how did you think they played together? Because I'm curious how it looked in person, because I had a different feeling of how it looked online.
Yeah, so I definitely love that you shouted out Mal, because I did get to ask her about that chance that was cleared off the line in the mid zone. And she was like, oh, I couldn't believe that. Like, she was really like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah, it was very frustrating. But yeah, I completely agree with you. Like there were times, Sophia Smith had one where I was just like, Soph, if you don't shoot the ball, like, I know you want to get Mal her goal. I love that. But right now, but yeah, to answer your question, honestly, I think it was better, but I still think it had that problem where playing at two different speeds, because the wings want to play one way, especially with the addition of Mallory Swanson. Like, she's going to get the ball and she's going to drive fast and quick and hard and get by the defense and put them under a lot of pressure, get by the byline. They were trying to keep her wide, and sometimes she would she started cutting inside as well, and so like that was happening. And then of course Rodman on the other side is just 1,000 miles per hour. She hit like, I don't know how many trend spins we got. I think it was like 3 or 4, and the crowd loved each one. But yeah, and I think that once they do that, they just want, like, I hate to, you know how it is. Like, I hate to say this, keep calling it out, but it's just so true. Like, Alex Morgan has a role to play. I just don't think it's a starting nine role on this team and with these fours, because to me, it was still like there were passes where they thought she was going to be able to get to it and she couldn't. So try to get some through balls going. And it's more so just she doesn't quite have that pace anymore. But it's the way those players play. It's the way Mal plays. It's the way Rodman plays. They want to go quickly. And they try to hit, keep the ball on the floor. They try to move the ball around. They're not really pop the ball up. You know, they try to hit cutbacks as well, which you have to put pressure on the defense and then back off of it in order to create that gap and then get back in a position to get a clean shot off. So, like, they were just, to me, it was just a little incongruent. And it kind of looked like, again, going at two different speeds. And because, quite honestly, right now, Swanson and Rodman and, you know, Lynn Williams and anybody else who happens to be a forward, they legitimately do play at a different speed than Alex Morgan right now, which is not a knock to her. It's just where she's at. And so that's what I kept seeing live. What did you see?
Yeah, I was seeing a bit of the same. And I was thinking, I was like, what feels, and I know we had this same conversation about W Gold Cup, but I do also think there were moments in W Gold Cup where like playing and starting Alex Morgan like really worked to their benefit. Like thinking against like Colombia,
for example,
I think that really worked to their benefit. And so for me, it's like, if you are going to start her as the nine, and I can't believe I would ever say this because I remember Vlatko being like, we want Alex to play like Kat. We're like, those are two entirely different players, my guy. They cannot play like each other. But I do think if you are going to play Alex Morgan in a starting role, surprisingly, it has to be an almost more of a false nine than a traditional nine, where she is dropping deep and you're trying to get the ball to her to flick on or pass on to your on-running wingers. And then, like, she is either going to need to haul ass to get into the box or, and to be fair, you normally will get, like, a player like a Jaden Shaw, who we haven't seen her play like this for San Diego currently because she keeps getting put out wide. But previously when she was playing centrally, she would kind of like get almost be that first person into the box. And then you'd have Alex Morgan like on running sometimes like a step or two behind into the box. Think about like those late runs out of midfield to try to get shots on goal. And so I'm like, and so that's what I was thinking. I was like, what is the big difference? Because the thing is, like, when it works, it works. And I will say, like, I was actually quite surprised also going back through W Gold Cup footage of, like, how good at times Alex Morgan was at like flicking the ball on, which I was like, I never thought of you with this type of player, if that makes sense. Like, I was like, this to me is not like one of your strongest suits, but I think if this is something that the U.S. is going to continually try to do, then it has to be getting her to drop deep a little bit so that way she can flick on the balls to a Mal Swanson or a Trinity Rodman or a Sophia Smith or Lynn Williams or something like that. And then having one of your younger players in midfield, and I'm thinking when she's healthy, a Rose Lavelle, for example, or even right now with Jaden Shaw, kind of getting in that ball, like getting in the box first to, you know, if your players are going high and wide to get on the end of that cross.
Yeah, I was going to say the problem that they've had in trying to do that is that Morgan can't be in two places at the same time. Or like when she flicks the ball in, she then can't get into the box to be that central like box problem, like that box presence. But I do think that you're right. If Jaden Shaw can, because she's very clever at getting into the box and picking her spots, I think that's a good opportunity. Like maybe that works then. And I would like to see that. So, yeah, I agree with you on that one. I do want to talk about Jaden Shaw a second, because like you mentioned her, she doesn't get to play the 10 for San Diego. The one, I don't know if this came across on the broadcast, but definitely watching live, she was like, I am free. Like I am where I want to be. She downplayed it in the post game because we got her in the mix zone and she was just like, yeah, some of the things that I do out wide because I tuck in, or it was very much the same. And I was like, come on, Jaden, like don't play with us. Like, come on. Like we saw you. She was so happy. She was so free, demanding the ball, getting the ball, moving the ball on the way she does. And this is why I've been campaigning so hard for her to play the 10. Not necessarily because I think she's so much of a better player than Rose Lavelle or so much of a better player than some of the other players who could play the number 10. It's her particular style of game. She does not need to have the ball often to be able to have an impact. She doesn't need it long. She's one of those players that gets it and then looks for a through ball, looks to get the ball behind the line. She's very good at like taking what like the attackers and freeing them, letting them go. And she's very good at recognizing defensive positioning, and she has an excellent array of passes. So whether it's like a perfectly weighted through ball or whether it's the chip ball, you know, diagonal or whatever, she's great at some of those things. And some of them from long distances. And so we didn't get to see a ton of that, but we saw quite a bit of her and the way that the attack moves once she gets on the ball. The thing that she can also do is what we saw with her goal. Listen, you tell me the number of players that can wind up from the top of the box, outside of the box, and hit a shot low and so sweet that the goalkeeper doesn't even move. Goalkeeper chilling right in the center of the goal and doesn't even move.
It was a sumptuous spike or strike. Oh my God. It was a sumptuous strike that honestly, it was like a spike in volleyball where you're just like, get out of my way. I'm just
going to spike this ball. See, that's why I thought you did that on purpose.
No. But yeah, no, that was an absolute sumptuous strike. And now I'm like, that's why you also have Jaden Shaw centrally. Like that's the reason for it. I hope there is a world. And to be fair, I fundamentally don't know how they would fit all three of them on the pitch, but I hope there is like a world where Rose, Kat, and Jaden can all play together. Cause I just feel like that.
Oh my God.
I know. I was like, look, you play two sixes and you have a Kat being a false nine with Rose and with Rose and Jaden also being tens. You just have three tens on the pitch. Look, Emma Hayes is coming. She loves tens. Yeah, she will convert any player who was previously at one point in life who was not a 10 into a 10, or a player who was previously a 10 into another position, or maybe sometimes player as a 10. No, but I think for me, that's like the perfect... It's like why you put Jaden Shaw in those positions, and like also why she is so good at what she does.
Yeah, she is... Excellent. I mean, she's still a teenager. It's just kind of wild.
That's crazy.
But she's so good and so smart at just doing the right thing at the right time, being in the right place at the right time. So yeah, I was ecstatic about watching that, and especially her getting her goal. What the stat came out, she was the first player, U.S. Women's National Team player ever to score in her first five starts.
Yep. First ever. Think about the attacking talent that the U.S. has had.
Right?
Like Mia... even player like Abby Wambach. I mean, Alex Morgan, when she was young, like went on an insane scoring tear. Like there are so there are so many like attacking talents who have been a part of this U.S. women's national team who have yet to like have not scored in their first five starts, which is absolutely insane. Like, and she's just a teenager. Like, imagine her, like her ceiling is the moon at this point.
Yeah. We just, again, let's get her in our natural position and let's just keep developing. And it's kind of like why I got frustrated with Vlatko and Sam Coffey. Like, yeah, Sam Coffey wasn't then what she is now. Cause I hear people, you know, trying to push back against people who are always like, who are on the Sam Coffey hype train for a while ago. They're like, well, she's improved a lot. Well, what the hell you think coaching is for? Make her, help her, right? Right? Help her get better. Like, this is why you see the talent. That's what you need to see, the talent. This is a great player at this position. Help her get better. And we didn't really see that happen. And she definitely didn't get it in game time, which is what she really needed on the national team was game time. You're not really going to fix a bunch of that stuff in training. You need to get film. You need to get game experience at the national team level. And now she's like, excellent. So yeah.
Or clear game plans. There were so many times where I was like, there's 11 player group thing going on right now. Yeah. There's 11 players group thinking and it is not pretty.
Yeah. I did want to talk about, of course, the second goal, because there are a couple things about the second goal. One, you know, Sophia Smith came on and Sophia Smith was great. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm always frustrated when she comes off the bench because I do not think she's a sub kind of person. Like, she's not a super sub. This is a player that can go full 90s and she should be part of your most dangerous attacking front line. She's too good for this role, but I appreciated the way she came in, and especially defensively. There are times where she just straight up took the ball from players who were pressing high. She just straight up was like, give me that, and just took the ball and was going 1v1 with the keeper. And I was like, yo, what is going on? There was a, I think the keeper saved with her legs once, and then another time is when she tried to pass to Mal, and I was like, damn it, Sophia, like that was your goal. But she was great. And that cut inside to win the penalty, at first I thought, especially the angle, because it happened at the far side, the far goal from us, so we couldn't really see it in the press box. And so I thought that it may have been outside the box. And then I saw a replay, and yeah, it looks like Gita just kind of like fell on top of her.
No, she just kind of took her out a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was definitely inside the box. So I think I even wrote, like, it looked like it might have been close, but then I saw, especially that overhead view. Have you seen those? The U.S. Women's National Team been dropping those overhead.
They have started dropping them. Yeah, they're really nice.
They're really dope. And on that one, you can definitely see that the contact is definitely inside the box. So like, it's not only like a really cool view, like it actually helps you be able to see what happened on the pitch accurately. How about it? More camera angles give you a better view of the action.
In fact, the NWSL should really have that. What a surprise. What a surprise. I thought coming in she was really electric. I can't lie. I 100% wish that we could have seen the resurgence of the Cat, Mal, Sophia trio.
Yeah.
We did not get that because Mal didn't play full 90 minutes, which makes sense. She's still technically still coming back. And so I was a little bit bummed about that, or because I was like, oh, these three together is just going to be spicy, beautiful, delicious. But no, we did not see that, even though we did see the return of Kat. 725 days. Whew. It took her to get back. Thanks to Chelsea for that tweet and for that number, because I was like, I don't even have that number off the top of my head. But yeah, I thought Sophia Smith coming on was really good, and I was like, the combinations that she like, the kind of the combinations and electricity she brings on every time she comes on the pitch, even though I 100% agree she should be starting, she should not be coming off the bench. I was like, I thought she just had a really good match and, you know, caused a penalty for the winning goal. And yeah, there were times where I was like, shoot, baby, please shoot, go shoot, please. Like, please shoot the ball. And it was like, pass him out. And I was like, yikes. It makes sense. But yeah, I thought she had a good performance too.
I think one of her first touches was her like being absolutely too amped, and she just booted the ball like damn near out the stadium. She
took a shot. I did see that. I do remember that.
I was like, I appreciate your energy right now, but like I need, like, let's get a goal. Okay, so let's talk about this because the goal was scored. You know, Lindsey Horan converts the penalty, which is always funny. They did that thing where they hold the ball and then they hand it off to somebody else. And, like, Japan wasn't even, like, doing nothing.
They were doing, right,
like,
yeah.
You normally they did not, do that.
when there's, like, chaos afoot. And I was like, yeah. That did not look like that.
They didn't do anything. They were just chilling. Like, all right, this sucks. but in the aftermath of the penalty, three substitutions happened. Chris LeDun came on for Mallory Swanson. Katerina Macario came on for Alex Morgan, and Sam Coffey went out for Corbin Albert. So I will say this. I have multiple problems with this. One, I'm going to give slight benefit of the doubt where I maybe shouldn't, because I think Olivia Moultrie was warming up and looked like she was going to come in, and then there was a precautionary. I think Sam Coffey had a head injury. Yeah, and they just took a precaution and just decided to be like, all right, you're not gonna play anymore. And so maybe that changed things. But also, one of my there's a couple problems with this. You know, number one, I think, is just like, it doesn't feel like there were any consequences. She was on the bench, she was available, and clearly she got in. So there was not even a full 90 minutes that went by that she maybe she would have started this game and didn't. So maybe not starting the game, but that's also like a, you were late to practice for 5 minutes, like by 5 minutes, slap on the wrist, not necessarily like you reposted and shared some really harmful shit and talk shit about a legend, or liked a post talking shit and wishing injury upon a legend of the game of this particular team. To me, that's not enough. So I don't know if that was the case, but I also think that Katerina Macario deserved that moment of like, here she comes. Like, we saw her get that moment with Chelsea. It was great. We saw her warming up on the sideline. We saw her, you know, stretching, getting ready to come on. When there was finally that break in play, when she could come on, you saw the board go up. Like, it was a super emotional, powerful moment. And I think Kat deserved that on the national stage. And I was just like really frustrated. So the way that it kind of worked inside the arena was in the aftermath of all like the goal celebrations, the crowds going bonkers because the U.S. retook the lead and all of that. Then subs just kind of happened. They restart play, and all of a sudden you see number 15 running around out there. And I was like, yo, they did that really hella quickly. And then a few minutes go by and you hear the announcer go, and you start announcing the subs. And they announce, you know, I don't remember who they announced first. They might have announced Crystal Dunn first. And, you know, you get cheers. And then they announce Corbin Albert, and you get kind of a half and half. You get some cheers, you get some boos, and then you move on real quick and announce like Katerina Macario, and then you're back to cheers, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was just like, I don't know. It felt, and the optics of it were that they just kind of snuck her on the pitch. They just found a good time with a lot of commotion going on and just slide her on the pitch, make these subs, all right, no problem. And then everybody's out there playing again, and you don't really get that moment where she's on the sideline and you kind of have to deal with a lot of reaction, extended reaction from what it means to so many people because of all of the hateful shit that she shared. So it was a big frustrating part of this game that I think was also unnecessary. There were other players you could have put on and probably still won this game or held on to the lead. So it was disappointing. I'll say that.
The interesting thing about it is, so I was watching from home, and to be fair, there's like, I'm going to say about anywhere from 15 to 30 second delay of like what I'm watching on TV compared to what's happening in the stadium. So, like, y'all would tweet something, and then I would, like, see the tweet, be like, huh? And then, like, see what was happening on screen. Like, for example, I knew Japan scored in the first 30 seconds because I saw two people be like, Japan! And I was like, what? And then I saw the ball go in the back of the net, and I was like, oh, that's what happened. And so with Corbin Albert, I had seen the tweets saying that she subbed in, but I, like, immediately turned to my TV. And to be fair, I did not see her sub in. A few other folks said that they did see her sub in, and I don't care that much to, like, go back on Max to, like, rewatch if she actually came in. But at least from like when I was seeing is like I went and I was looking for because I was curious what the crowd reaction would be. And I like did not see her get subbed in and didn't hear, like, for example, the in-game announcer say it. I did eventually hear the stadium announcer say it because there's like a bit of a there's like a delay of when that subs actually come in and whatnot. And then I there was like, you know, the graphic of like when a player subs out, when a player subs in. I did see that. But yeah, like seeing everyone, like it, I don't want to put words or actions in people's mouths, but it almost felt like a bit strategic of like, oh, this is when we're going to get her subbed in. And to be fair, I don't know if it was because they were like, we really need to get Sam Coffey off right now. But I do completely agree with the, it took away from Kat's moment of like Kat being coming back for the first time in 725 days and being able to have her moment. Also with that, I was a bit annoyed that they were like bringing Kat on. They were like, defend. And I was like, no.
Yeah, that sucked.
Absolutely not. Like, let this girl cook up top. But yeah, I was like that, you know, it's still something that's factoring into this, like this current national team camp. And yeah, there's just been like, I can't lie, like a lot of hoopla, but there's just been like a lot of like back and forth online of, or quote unquote punishment, things like that. Like, and look, we're not in those quote unquote conversations by the U.S. women's national team. So we don't know if there's, you know, much more going on behind the scenes, but, and like, that's, it's the truth. That's all we get. It's like what we see basically what's happening. So yeah, I just hope like, I don't know. The one thing I take away from this mostly is I just hope that the queer players that are on the team feel safe and comfortable in that environment.
Yeah, same. It's real shitty. And I also thought like a couple things from the Kat perspective. Like one, yes, this was her return to the national team in so long. Again, 725 days, she said. I will remember the number at some point. And
shout
so
out to the Chelsea Women's Twitter account.
And so that was frustrating, but also Kat is one who, what in the last She Believes Cup that she played in, they were wearing the protect trans kids on their wrists. Mm-hmm. And when she scored, she held it up and pointed to it. So she's been a public ally, and to not only take her moment away from her, but do it to kind of protect it again, optically, don't know if this was calculated, but optically, this is how it translates. To protect a player who shared some deeply transphobic and deeply homophobic things. That doesn't sit right with me. You know, that's just really, really not the message you want to send, or you shouldn't want to send. And so thinking about these things as more than just like, oh, she's under pressure. Understand the gravity of what she said, or what she shared. Understand how, like, the platform that she has and how she used it to spread that kind of rhetoric, that kind of hateful rhetoric. That's important. That is a problem. And so to me, not even that I don't have any interest in seeing Corbin Albert like punished, right? I don't need to see her like shame walked or anything, but there does need to be accountability for some of these things so that it doesn't happen again. This is, again, people act like cancel culture. Oh my God. This is how people learn. You burn your hand on the stove. You don't touch the stove. It's the same shit. It's the same lesson applied.
And you walk around with a burn mark.
Exactly. Right. Same lessons apply. You do something dumb and you do something that's incongruent with what this team has historically stood for and meant, then you got to go sit down somewhere and work on yourself. But there are, you don't get to just immediately in the very next game available, hop back in the pitch with the jersey on and act like everything's all good. And so that was really unfortunate. And of course, she was not available to be spoken to after the match. So whatever, didn't expect that she would be. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just had to note that because that was another thing that came. And I don't really see much talk about it outside of people on like the Twitter timeline. And I was just kind of like, yeah, I don't. Any way they try to spin that, even if they talk about the Coffey injury again. There are just more things you could have done with your lineup to protect. But you also brought up a good point about Kat defending. I didn't like that.
I didn't like that at all.
I didn't like that at all.
I said, why are you making her defend?
I know, right? Let Kat go for a goal or something.
Like, let her score a goal on her first match back. my
All right. gosh. Was there anything else you wanted to say about this game? Because I have one other note, but then I'm done.
No. I feel like we've covered most of my thoughts. Besides, Casey Kruger should start.
Yeah, that's true.
But I feel about that all the time.
Yeah, I do think you called it out earlier, but I do think Emily Fox hasn't had the greatest of times sometimes back there. Rodman was needed multiple times.
I was like, I saw Rodman tracking back often. And it's the risk reward you decide when you want to play with two high flying outside backs, right? But like that means you have to have a midfield that is an absolute engine and a whole unit to prevent you basically from getting scored on by identical game plans on the opposite side of the field, which is quickly get the ball off you and then just launch a ball down the field and be like, my fast wingers will go and get to it. Like, if you're not going to have Sarah Gordon back there who can cover, and to be fair, like Sarah Gordon is not perfect. And also that expectation should not be put on her at all times to be like, she will just come in and clean up everything. Like you got to have there are other parts of, like the other parts of your team have to function at a extremely high capacity, so that way you don't get scored on in the same way each time. Because I've seen it happen for lots of teams that play with super high wing, like super high outside backs, and it's just like it's a risk reward thing. But also a lot of those teams have normally great center backs and normally great six who can get in and cover that position,
or you have great, you know, you have kind of attacking fullbacks who can do both, you know, that are great 1v1 defenders and that can contribute up high on the pitch and attack in those wide forward spaces like Casey Kruger can. So, again, back to Casey Kruger. The one thing I did want to note, though, is you mentioned it, but I want to underscore it. It's the U.S. is finishing. I do think that, yes, they let in the earliest goal ever, but I do think that they fought back clearly, obviously, got a goal, got a penalty, one goal in open play, one penalty. That's good. And then they kind of held on towards the end because Japan started to cook. Once you sit back, you give a team like that a lot of possession and they're like, hey, we know what to do with this.
They almost got burned off two set pieces too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, set piece defending was still a question mark as well. But the thing I'll say is that I want to see more clinical finishing from the U.S., you know, because this is a game that could have been put out of reach with another goal. 3-1 changes everything. You're good. 3-1, right? As long as you don't give up that 3-2 or whatever, like an hour left in the game, you're good. But they didn't score that second goal until the 77th. If that was like their third goal, the rest of that game, you're good, right? So I want to see that. Japan, again, they have multiple ways they can play. They had 6 total shots. 5 of them were on target. The U.S. had 18 total shots. 7 of theirs were on target. Mm-hmm. That's not really, like, not saying you need to have, like, just one shot off target, but if you get 18 shots, you need more chances hitting the frame, and you need more quality chances for the goalkeeper to have to deal with. And that's what we didn't necessarily see. There were some getting in some good positions, but either poor finishing. I mentioned the shot that Sophia Smith skied, but there were just some times when the final shot just wasn't there, wasn't struck with enough quality to really test, either be on target or really test the keeper. And those things have to change, because if you're going to play like that and you're going to create those opportunities, you have to get the goals for them as well. Otherwise, you can have one of those weird games that happens where you're dominating, it looks great, and then all of a sudden the game ends 2-2 because the other team had like 4 chances and they scored 2 of them.
Right, yeah. No, I completely agree. I think that's something, despite kind of going back to league play, like NWSL league play, like despite all of the crazy goal thrillers that we've seen, like a 4-3, a 3-2, comebacks, all that stuff, I don't think the finishing across the NWSL has been particularly strong this season, with the exception of maybe one or two players. And I think that is also translating on the national team. They're like, I mean, I said the game should have ended 3-1, but that game also could have easily ended 4-1, for example, for the U.S. Like, there were moments where it was like, this has to be going in the back of the net. Like, Lindsey Horan had a big chance missed, I want to say maybe the 62nd or so minute. It was like right before they got the penalty. Where it was like, you know, a big chance missed. It was just really kind of across the team where I was like, I like Trinity Robin had a chance that she skied that probably should have went in the back of net. I know that there was like a player on running to her, but I feel like, you know, maybe you get yourself over the ball that probably, like, the goalkeeper probably can't reach it. So, because it wasn't like they necessarily, I know that Japan's keeper had saves, but it wasn't necessarily like she was, like, we were like peltering the ball and she was standing on her head, which is like what we've seen, like, was it like Portugal 2021, Portugal 2022, maybe, where it was like, I think her, it's about Inés Pereira, where it's just like an absolute brick wall and like the US could not score for anything. Or maybe it was once against Canada. Do you remember the old She Believes where Press basically put the ball on Sam Mewes' forehead? And that's actually, no, that might have been the Portugal game where like a player was like absolutely like a keeper was standing on their head in goal. And it was just like, man, we're setting up good opportunities and think that these should be goals. And then somehow the keeper grows an extra set of arms or somehow their fingertips get longer and they can keep everything out of the net. Like, I don't necessarily think this was that type of game. And I was like, that is something, despite having such fantastic forwards and probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest forward line in the world when the right people are in the right places, like, you really do need to be putting those chances away.
Yeah, I will completely agree with you. Final third decision making in the NWSL has been one of the key headlines or stories of the early season.
Not just decision making, they just like, sometimes I see some Moonball USA.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh my.
It has left some wanting. Okay. Really quick, I do want to touch on Canada and Brazil because that game did happen and it does give us our actually final and I guess third place
match? Yeah, I guess third place.
So the third place match is Japan versus Brazil. That's going to be Tuesday, April 9th at, I got to do the math, 4 p.m. because I'm now in Mountain Time Zone for work conference, whatever. U.S. Canada is going to be at 7 p.m. Eastern. Again, on Tuesday, those games are going to be in Columbus. Shout out to the Brazil squad, who I saw in person today at the airport. I didn't say anything. I will say Tarcians is deeply committed to the Afro Puff because I was like, hey, I love that you just rock that everywhere. It was really cool. Apparently, they fly Delta. So I don't know if I'm divulging state secrets, but they flew Delta straight to Columbus from Atlanta. And I saw the entire team. At first, I think I saw Gabby Portillo because I was in line at like Pete's Coffee. And then somebody comes up behind me wearing this like purple, like the Brazil, like track jacket. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, wait a second. And I looked back and I was like, oh shit, that's but I didn't say anything. I kind of froze a little bit. And then I, you know, ordered and everything. She got her thing and walked back. And then I walked to my gate and I passed and I was like, ah, yep, there's the whole squad. The whole squad just chilling.
Was Marta there? I don't know what I'm doing. I just turned around in the airport and Marta was like 6 feet away from me.
I was trying not to be like, creepy. Like, just like kind of scan everybody because especially because the whole squad was there. Somebody was going to look up and be like, who's this weird motherfucker right here? And so I wasn't trying to like be weird, but I do think I saw Marta kind of like, I think I heard her more than I saw her. Let's say that. And so I'm pretty sure she was there. But yeah, that was kind of dope. As for this game was kind of wild. Tarcian scores a penalty in the 22nd minute. And then Canada, Vanessa Gill gave up that penalty, which she's been having a rough one for Canada.
Then she gets the equalizer.
Yeah, she gets it back in the 77th minute with a header. That was great. And then it went to penalties and I was so sad. I thought I was going to get to see Marta score a goal live and then it was saved. And I was really, really, really sad.
It is painful. Full disclosure, I did fall asleep in the middle of the second half because Canada wasn't really doing anything and it was just like Brazil trying to hoop. Essentially is how I describe Brazil playing.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to get that second goal. So unfortunately I just dozed off on the couch in the middle of it. And then I woke up to penalties. And then went and looked back and saw Gilles said it, which is, to be fair, a great set piece. I don't know what the goalkeeper was doing on that. They didn't call in any of their previous goalkeepers for this tournament.
So this is one of the stories of this game, or at least this competition. Is it your boy, Arthur Elias, the coach for Brazil? I don't know what's going on with this man, but every single time he's got to put a national team roster together, he's like, just
vibes.
Whatever. Yeah, just pure vibes. He just puts names in a hat, like throws them up in the air, and just whatever, like 20 or 25 he picks up, that's who's going. Because suddenly, like, Cristiani was back with the team. Tamires was back with the team.
I would have died. Like, oh.
He went back to the old school squad, and it was just a weird mix of play. Adriana didn't get selected, so she wasn't with the team. It was just like, I don't know what he's doing with his squad, but I hope he finds a good like 11 or 18 to 20, you know, group of players to stick with, because it's been a lot of in and out over the past, I don't know, what, two or three, maybe even four camps.
That's purposely what he's doing. He's like trying to figure out the double players. I know the Olympics are soon. You would expect that, like, even though, I mean, I guess I kind of get it, right? Like, these games don't necessarily, no shade to the We Don't Know What She Believes Cup, but like, these games technically don't really mean anything in the grand scheme. So yeah. I'm assuming they're probably gonna have some like June friendlies. In those June friendlies will be his final squad of players that's called into the 18 for the Olympics. Even though I do also agree, like, one thing I feel like we've seen, especially under Vlaco with the U.S. Women's National Team and like kind of those hockey line changes and stuff like that, it's like people weren't able to necessarily build chemistry between each other. He is also quite lucky in that a lot of these Brazilian players, like 7 or 8, play in the NWSL. So maybe they're finding ways to find chemistry just through like playing each other and stuff like that. However, I'm like, it's like I get both ways, right? Like, you want to figure out those players on the bubble, but also at the same time, you should probably have like something close to at least your starting 11 so they can also gain chemistry with each other. But yeah, he didn't call in any of the Brazilians that we are very familiar with, especially for this roster, like a Bia Zanarato. Obviously, we know Dabinia's hurt, but she wasn't called in initially anyway.
No, Adriana. No, Bruninha.
Bruninha hasn't actually been called in the last two windows. I'm concerned. I was like, I don't know if she's going to go to the Olympics. We'll see. But yeah, like a player like Cristiani's come back, even though I'm like, I want her to score so bad. Before I fell asleep, I wanted her to score so bad. I was like, get Cristiani in here. To be fair, I fell asleep with like 10 minutes to go. I didn't actually miss that much of the second half. I like saw March and Cristiani come in and I wanted her to score. But yeah, honestly, I thought Canada, can't lie, got a bit lucky. I thought Brazil mollywopped them for the majority of this match. Then they just had one really important set piece, which the U.S. is not necessarily good at defending. And so the U.S. versus Canada in this final, hopefully, apparently it is going to rain, but it's not supposed to rain nearly as much as it did in San Diego. And I also trust the Columbus Crew Stadium to probably have better drainage generally, because it rains more there in general. But yeah, we have a U.S. versus Canada final once again.
Yeah, so my thing with Canada, which was weird, is Bev Priestman had Janine Becky kind of playing as a wingback, so she could have Janine Becky and Chloe Lacoste in the game at the same time. And
I have seen her do that before.
Don't do
that. It's foolish every time.
Yeah, just stop doing that. And it also, you know, not just from like the spear perspective, like Gabby Carl had played well in that position. Don't do that. It's kind of my summation. In theory, in summation, don't do that. My last note on this game, and then we'll get out of here, is that Mercedes-Benz Stadium is an NFL stadium, and it's massive. All right, it is huge. It's really big. There's a lot of seats, and of course, with the U.S. going first in a doubleheader, you expect some clear out. But it's hard to tell. You know, it looked emptier than it actually was because there's like it's such a spread out stadium. There are so many seats. There were still a lot of people there. I don't know what the number was. I have no idea of how to guess. Somebody could tell me it was like 12,000. I'd be like, yeah. And somebody could have been like, it was 30,000. I'd be like, sounds right. So I really don't know how to guess. But I can tell you that when Marta subbed in, it was the loudest cheer I heard all night. And that's U.S. team included. Everybody went bonkers for Marta. And I know it's the loudest because that was the only time then my ears kind of pierced just a little bit. I was like, oh, that sound is different. that was dope to hear.
I mean, people go up for Marta, and that doesn't surprise me because I too go up for Marta. If I think of that photo that won with the North American photo contest or like soccer photo contest, and it was Marta giving that little girl a kiss on her head, and she's just sobbing. And I said, wow, that's so me-coded. I too would just cry if I was next to Marta. But yeah, I mean, I do love that. I did see some tweets that I guess a ton of people left. So hopefully I hope it was around the 30,000 number. I mean, look, it's free footy and it's Brazil. Like, I feel like people are just going to want to tune into Brazil because they're Brazil. But yeah, they will play Japan in the third place game. And I have no idea how that match is going to turn out.
Yeah, that's going to be wild.
Either team could score and concede 7 goals. Both of them, really.
Honestly, it's a game like this where I wish Brazil had more of a set, like, relationships between players instead of this, because you're going to need that against Japan. Or maybe they won't. Who knows? Maybe they'll, like...
Kadeh scores a hat trick.
Yeah, like, maybe somebody will just go bonkers and everything will be fine. All right, let's get out of here. We will probably try to drop another episode after the third place match and the final. Again, I'm at a work conference, so we'll see. It's going to be interesting. But at the very worst, I should be able to... Maybe I can record on Wednesday. I'm hoping I can see the game like on Tuesday, but I might have to just rewatch it or watch it on demand. And then maybe I don't know. We'll see. We'll figure it out. Anyway, Courtney, anything else or just bye?
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to Yaya. Not only have I been listening to that song, Beyonce song, and we're going to talk about Cowboy Carter next episode, Andre. I've been steaming to talk about it with someone.
Okay.
But Yaya, she is just my literal young favorite Brazilian. She is so much fun, and I enjoy watching her play at all times. She's going to be a menace, and I looked it up, and she's only 20. And I'm like, that's incredible. I'm a big fan of her. So I'm a big fan of what Brazil is doing, bringing along the young players. I just hope they also make it to the 18 for the Olympics, and I do wish the Olympics roster grew to 23. Why is it 18? I know it's 18 and 4, but it's still stupid, fundamentally. Just make it 23.
Yeah.
Look at how much these players are constantly playing, especially at their senior team levels and full professionals. Make it 23. Why? Why are you doing this? Make it 23.
It really does not make any sense. I mean, think about you want to have backups at every position. That's at least 22 players. Right. So, like, it makes sense. It makes logical sense to do that. Why it's 18, it doesn't make any sense.
No, and you have to have at least 2 goalies. So I'm like, literally make it make sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Real stupid.
It's real stupid. But that's it for me. That's it from us, I guess.
All right, yeah. I mean, the last thing we need is you to sign us off.
Do you want me to do ASMR style? Like last time.
You can try, but you're still gonna have to give us the real one. So, you know, whatever you want to do, I'm just gonna turn my mic off and wait.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.